Okay,
good
I
morning.
Guess we're already recording. Good morning. Hi, everybody. Thank you for getting up. It's like 6 in the morning on the West Coast.
In the West Coast, yes.
Yeah, so thank you for me, really, for getting up, because it's early. So, yes, thank you so much for hanging out. We are the Lesser Scots, and we're going to talk about the future of .NET on the server. This is the first of a two-session, two-part thing. So this is the, you know, the 101, maybe 201 level session. With Scott Hunter and I, because we were mostly just managers. We just delete email. We don't actually write any code. He mostly deletes email. And then after this, there'll be a short break, and then we'll come back with David Fowler, who is one of the developers who worked on this. And then we're going to go 400 level, and we're going to look at memory and, I don't know.
Do all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah. That's also a great session if you have any really hardcore questions and want to understand how anything works. You can raise your hand, and we can answer anything, because Fowler wrote it all. So.
Yeah, exactly, and he's here too. So if we make a mistake, he will very likely run on the stage and say, stop doing that to my product. We've got a bunch of different machines here and a bunch of different demos and things like that. I want to make sure you guys understand that what we're showing you, though, is the future. While we're going to ship stuff and give you bits to play with, this is at best an alpha, and it's the beginning. So this is in an ongoing process. It's going to be in the open, and it's going to happen, you know, a little bit every month for the next several months,
yeah.
Yeah, so don't expect that you're going to be shipping anything on this anytime soon.
Yeah, the bits that we're going to give away today for this are really raw bits without even any tooling. We're going to have tooling in a few more weeks for people that want to play with it.
Right, so some of the tooling that we'll show you won't get today. You will get the runtime and the command line, so you're going to be able to do all the stuff that we're doing, except for the Visual Studio gestures, which are cobbled together in daily builds of whatnot that we have here.
Yeah.
Okay? Cool. So there are a lot of installs of .NET out there, and it scales from little tiny things like the micro framework all the way up to the cloud. We work on Azure and web tools, so we're thinking about what we can do to make .NET better on the cloud and on cloud servers and hosted environments, whether it be your host or our host. And we're hearing, of course, we've talked about this before, that developers are required to move a lot faster than before, that open source is important. And the balance between existing applications that you have to maintain, that might be on an existing version of the .NET framework, but wanting to innovate, use new stuff without freaking out IT. This is a really important scenario.
Which we'll carry a lot about today. We'll talk a lot about how this works.
Right. So one of the main things that we're going to show you is this idea of side-by-side and why that would allow someone in a really constrained environment to use new features without hurting old applications.
Well, we can ask the crazy question. Who in here is allowed to use .NET 4.5 on their servers?
Okay, who's still using .NET 2 because IT won't let you upgrade?
How about .NET 4? Ah, see, a lot of hands.
So more hands on that one.
One of the things that we'll talk about today is the benefit of the technology we're working on is you have the option to deploy the framework as part of your application, meaning that you don't require a global installation of .NET on the machine, which means you don't have to wait for IT. You can actually move faster, use our newer features faster than you can today.
Right, imagine being able to use .NET, X.x+1 on a machine without even having to bother IT at all.
Right, you could use next week's .NET.
Yeah, or a daily build or your own private build.
Right.
So everything that we're going to be showing you is standards-based. We're all about HTML5 and CSS3 and JavaScript right now, and we want to make you to be able to write applications using whatever, you know, highly interactive technologies you want to use, whether those be Angular or Ember, things like that. Everything we're showing you is on the server. Your relationship with client-side frameworks is unrelated, and we think that the speed of development and that quick development cycle change and refresh and change and refresh is going to be really well suited to today's JavaScript applications. Now, our approach has changed a little bit. We're trying to make things a lot more agile and flexible, so you probably have used NuGet. Is anyone using NuGet to ship your things to other divisions or other departments where your build server creates a NuGet file and that artifact is what you then hand to the next people? Right, so kind of the days of just handing a pile of DLLs in a folder to the department next door is over. That applies at Microsoft as well. So we're trying to come up with a way to do continuous modular releases where the .NET framework isn't a big install and reboot your computer kind of an experience. We're working with those teams, and they've got the .NET framework kind of split up, and we're going to show you that.
Yeah.
And then everything, of course, is going to be as open as we can possibly make it, and we hopefully will impress you today.
Yeah, well, we're going to release the code publicly today.
Yeah,
as well.
We'll release the code publicly today, and we'll show you how that works out. And the code will actually be in the .NET Foundation. So this is going to be something that you can definitely count on. And these are some of the different things that are in the foundation, and more will be coming.
Yeah, I think anything that we do in Microsoft moving forward with .NET will be in the foundation. That's kind of the mantra we've had.
So why don't you talk to us about some of the things that we're going to do.
So this is an overview of the things that we want to do. We want to talk about the fact that the framework as we use it today is a big thing that contains a bunch of stuff. And we want to be much more modular. We want to let you guys choose the bits of stuff that you actually want to use. Even in an ASP.NET application, today we kind of give you the kitchen sink by default. And that can actually affect things like runtime performance and stuff like that. And so one of the things we want to do as well is break that up and let you just use the pieces that you want to use. One of the goals is also, we know that the cloud is becoming more and more important, and we want to make it easier for you to take an on-premise app and just copy it to the cloud and have it work, and I'll drill in on a slide about more of that. As Scott was saying before, open source is super important to us. We want the code to be out there for the public, for you guys to have a chance to take a look at. We care about faster development cycle from two perspectives. One is you being able to use our latest bits as soon as possible without having IT block you. And secondly, we want to make the cycle inside the tools faster than it is today. And also, when we say choose the editors that you use, we're going to show some demos where you can use something outside of Visual Studio. Visual Studio is still the best first-class experience, but the big thing that we care about here is even the Azure portal today, we've enabled an editor called Monaco that lets you actually edit your application in the cloud. And we're doing some work here to enable it where you can edit your ASP.NET application in the cloud and use that editor instead of using Visual Studio. And of course, we're going to show some cool stuff where, because we've open sourced this, we can actually run it on cross-platform. Just to break down, we think there's a couple types of apps that you typically build. You're going to build what we call a line of business. That's your I'm inside my IT department and I'm going to build an app for my group. And I'm going to build it on the web because I don't want to have that deployment hassle that I might have with a thick application. The second one is you might be wanting to use ASP.NET because you're actually building a thick application, a WinForm WPF application, and you want it to talk to some backend running web ASP.NET Web API. And then, as Hanselman was saying earlier, we have this new notion of I'm going to build an AngularJS application or an Ember or a Knockout or a Backbone. And build that in Visual Studio, talking to some ASP.NET backend. And I'll drill into a little bit more about what each of these things means. So faster development cycle. So part of that means we're going to ship all of our features as NuGet packages. We've already been shipping things like MVC, Web API, SignalR, EF as NuGet packages. But now we're going to actually take that even further down to a smaller level where we'll ship the CLR as a NuGet package, which allows us to ship things faster. That's also the feature that enables you to actually install your application on a machine and guarantee that you're not going to break anything, any other thing on that machine. No longer do you have the case of putting something on that machine and, oh, your app affected something else. In this world, you can actually build a completely self-contained app that affects nothing on the machine. The second thing is, if you're a developer like myself, I found that sometimes I've ran into these weird bugs where I'm writing in Visual Studio and I publish my app to my server and it doesn't work the same way. And that's because the patch level between my machine and the server is not the same. In this world, whatever you develop on is what you actually copy to the server, and the exact same code runs in both places. The only thing that we actually plan to patch in this world via Windows Update or Microsoft Update is a zero-day security vulnerability. Outside of that, it's up to you to come to us and decide when you want to take a fix versus us pushing a fix to your box from the cloud and breaking your machine. Next thing is performance, fast. We want to make our startup times faster. Inside of Microsoft, we have some demos where these demos today take 16, 17 seconds to boot up the very first time. We want to get those down to 2 seconds, make the application start faster. Lower memory. So one thing, unbeknownst to a lot of folks, is when a request comes into ASP.NET, we new up this huge HTTP context object, which ends up being about 30K. In the world that we're going to show you today, we new up about 2K of objects when a request comes in. Part of the reason that we new up that big object today was when we actually wrote ASP.NET, we were trying to have compatibility with classic ASP, and so we actually mimicked a lot of that stuff, which you probably don't even need today. And so you got about a 90% reduction in memory already from that.
If I may expand on that a little bit, the idea is that when WebForms came out, WebForms continues to and did solve a really interesting problem to make line of business apps easier, and that HTTP request object has a bunch of context in it. But the kinds of business problems that you're solving when you're putting data grids and data bound things in web forms in a very compatible way is an entirely different technical problem than a really, really low level web API that talks JSON and needs to get in and get out. So you're gonna be able to do both of those things. You're gonna have line of business apps on one side and really, really high performance, high throughput type JSON REST apps. We're bringing that memory down to just effectively
nothing,
which means that your memory pressure is less, the GC, the garbage collector, has to work less, everything gets better. So there's a break from the past here.
Right. And that's one of these slides here. It talks about the fact that it's modular, you opt into features. When I mean opt into features, if you want your app to serve static files, you have to opt into that. If you want an error page in your app, you opt into that. Basically, you opt into each of those components. The other benefit is those components are all modular now, which means you can replace those with your own components. You never could have replaced the error page in ASP.NET before. That's baked somewhere into System Web. And
so I can replace the yellow screen of death.
Yes.
With a pink screen of death.
If you want to.
Awesome.
And as Scott was saying, you can build an app that part of the app actually just is handed a raw socket when a connection comes in, and the rest of your app can be running in MVC or Web API or SignalR or whatnot. Another thing is we want to. If we're looking at other web frameworks, you don't actually have to do a build step. So we actually want to remove the build step. And there's two reasons you want to do that. One is it makes application development faster. You just save the file, refresh your browser, and you're good to go. The second one is, I was talking about that cloud scenario where you can actually edit your application in the cloud. I necessarily don't have a build step in the cloud on an Azure website. And so by requiring that build step, you can't use that Monaco editor to edit your C# files. And then finally, cloud. Cloud is super important. We're part of the Azure team, and so we actually want to make ASP.NET the best way to write apps in Azure. And there's a couple things there. If you actually copy your ASP.NET application to Azure today, there's a variety of weird things that have to happen. First off, if you use session state, you need to know that you need to replace your session state with a session state provider that's designed to work in the cloud. We don't tell you that. You can publish your app up there, and it'll just fail in weird ways until you actually figure this out. When you do plug in the right session state provider, you're going to find things break. The one that we use in memory will take any object. The one that we use in Azure requires things to be serializable, so you'll find your app will break in weird places. If you want to use a cache, well, we just announced a new Azure cache on Monday, the Azure Redis cache. It's got a different programming API than the cache in ASP.NET, so you have to remember to throw away all the code that you have talking to the ASP.NET cache and switch to use the APIs for Redis cache. We'd love to be able to let you just seamlessly use the ASP.NET cache and plug the whatever cache in. Obviously, you want the highest fidelity. You'd have to use the raw APIs for that cache. But we think we can give you a base story. And then configuration. We have all these things like XML transforms that come on webconfig to modify it from a local to a cloud. If you have your connection strings and stuff in there and you check it into GitHub, you could actually check in your production stuff into a source code repository or something like that. We want to block all that and change that. And then finally, we want to make it as easy to develop in the cloud as it is on-premise, so we want to do things like you can actually control F5 directly into the cloud, or you could control F5 and debug directly in the cloud without even having to think about that, making that as seamless as possible. And then finally, because we're open source, there's nothing preventing you from running our runtime on anything that Mono runs on. So Scott's going to show a demo later today where we're actually running ASP.NET on a Mac. And as I said before, being able to use other editors enables us to let you actually edit these applications in the cloud, even though you're going to get the best fidelity with Visual Studio. This is something we had some questions on yesterday as we were describing this to people. You'll notice here there's two columns here. One is .NET vNext, and the second one is .NET vNext Cloud Optimized. You're going to get a bunch of benefits in both of these columns, and I can describe what .NET vNext Cloud Optimized means. The current .NET framework today is about 200 megs. If I told you you were going to copy that 200 megs into the bin folder of your application, that would not be a very good story. Could you imagine uploading 200 megs every time you wanted to upload your application to the cloud? And so what the cloud-optimized version of .NET is, it's a version of .NET that we actually took just the bits that we think are important for building web applications. That means there's no wind forms, there's no WPF. A lot of those things are removed because we want to shrink down and have a core piece of .NET that's about 10 megs that we can use.
And to be clear, that's ASP.NET vNext.
Correct.
That doesn't have WinForms and WPF and things
right.
like that.
We're not deprecating any of those things. This is more about how do we enable ASP.NET developer to then deploy the framework as part of their application. And so if you use that smaller version of .NET, well, that's when you get the full side-by-side because you can actually copy that up with your application and you're going to get some better memory in perf because we're not using as much framework as we do today. And then finally, to bring a couple things to point is this does not affect web forms or MVC5 or WebAPI2 or SignalR. All the stuff that you're using today works exactly like it does today on .NET vNext and will continue to work exactly the way it does today. If you're using MVC, WebAPI, SignalR, there are some changes here. We have a new project system, which Scott's going to demonstrate. We have a new configuration system, so WebConfig's a little different. It's not WebConfig anymore. We actually merged a bunch of the frameworks into one framework. So we took MVC, WebAPI, and web pages and made them one framework, which means they're more consistent. And in that world, there is no system web. So if you're calling stuff in that particular DLL from MVC, you won't be able to do that anymore. And we've also changed HTTP context to be a much smaller HTTP context than we have today. And so there's some breaks there that you might actually have.
So how do I balance that? I've got a bunch of web forms apps. I've got a bunch of MVC 3 and 4 apps that are working great already. And then at the same time, I might have some new applications that I want to develop on this. How do I take all three of those things forward?
So what I would say is, this is what I tell customers today anyways, is why would you upgrade apps that are already working perfectly anyways? The real time that you would actually want to go play with this cloud-optimized SKU or way of building applications is if you are building a brand new application and you want to have the fidelity of being able to put it on a box and not affect the rest of the machine. Mm-hmm. If that's important to you, then you're welcome to take the smaller version of the framework and use that to build that application. You can also build a new MVC 6 app directly on the full framework. So everything we're going to show today works both on the big framework and on the smaller subsets. So it's up to you, the developer, to choose, do you want the ability to be side by side to ship the framework as part of your application if you want to take the smaller framework.
So that big framework still exists and is still part of .NET vNext?
Correct. So nothing's changed is kind of what we want to say.
Well, nothing's changed. You have a choice.
Yes.
And you might sit down when you're going to write your app and decide, well, we're going to go full framework on this app, and then these other two apps will go cloud optimized.
Exactly. And we kind of show that. We know if you look at the future of .NET here, we have a way of building client applications today, a way of building web and services on .NET. And we have all the things we're familiar with today for building each of these things. And we have these specialized subsets where I can build, we announced at Build that you can build a native application. If you build a native application, you're basically compiling the .NET framework into your application. So you're getting the same benefits that we're talking about in the cloud on the device, because your actual framework is in the app, and so the framework on the machine does not affect your application. You get the same small footprint, and you get the ability to run on across devices, on the store and on the phone.
Well, this slide really makes a good point, that like on a phone, you're not going to want to ship ASP.NET, and in
right.
ASP.NET, you're not going to want to ship phone bits.
Exactly.
That's why these are specialized.
And then cloud optimized, you get the same small footprint because we're shipping a smaller version of the framework. You get the side-by-side because the framework's part of your application. And you get the ability to run cross-platform as well. And then, of course, all .NET gets better because we have new compilers, the Roslyn compilers, which were announced at Build. They're across all of this stuff. The BCL's across all of this stuff. We've got next-gen jitters that run on 64 bits as well that are in all this stuff. So all of .NET gets better as part of all this.
Well, and even potentially existing apps. As you take a look at the web dev blog, we talked about how the Roslyn compilers can be plugged into existing apps. You plugged one into an existing web forms app and then enabled C# 6 features within that application.
Right. So in Scott and my talk yesterday, we actually announced the codedom providers for Roslyn for .NET.
That allows existing .NET.
Existing ASP.NET, which allows anybody, any app you have today can actually use the Roslyn compilers. And then, of course, as Scott was saying earlier, everything's open and in the .NET Foundation. And now we can...
Let's do some demos, hey?
Do some demos.
All right. Not that I want you to stop talking, but let's go.
Show some code.
I'm excited. Okay, cool. So we'll just do a hello world. Is that cool?
Sure.
And then we'll go from there. All right, so from within here, this is, again, this is just all, you know, pre-everything, pre-icons. This is the ASP.NET, one ASP.NET that you know about. These here are marked vNext and just sitting in there for the purposes of this demo. It'll all be reconciled.
We'll merge all that into one ASP.NET.
We're not going to go back to six ASP.NET.
No, this is just a point in time because these are alphabets.
Yeah. So I'm going to go and start that up, and it starts up immediately. And let's take a look at what's going on over here. Let's just kind of move a little slow. So it looks pretty much like what we expect. We've got scripts and controllers and views and things like that. A couple things that we don't see immediately is I don't see a web config and I don't see a global ASA. I do see references though, but when I open that up, it's a little bit tidier. So we've got a nested references experience there. And you can see we're using, in this case, .NET 4.5, and I can open that up and then look at MVC, which I know about.
Well, the big change here is what you're seeing in references, you're now seeing packages. Instead of showing DLLs, we're actually showing you packages. And in this case, when you're showing something like Microsoft ASP.NET MVC, MVC today is made up of many packages. But we know you don't want to have your references look like it's an explosion of packages. And so we actually roll those up into a meta package at the very top, which kind of consolidates those things together.
So if I, for example, take a look at MVC and then right click and then say properties, you can see that that is type package, and then I can go and see where it's located. So this is packages and DLLs and references are all being kind of reconciled into
one
kind of cohesive piece.
Question was, would we be able to build packages?
Yeah, of course. You'd be able to do everything. All the power in the world to you, my friend. Yes. Let me rephrase, to prevent questions during the talk, anything obvious, you will be able to do. it's a great question, but I just want to make it, like, I would be really sad if he, like, yelled out, like, are you going to be able to do this? I'm like, oh, crap, no. I need to make a call.
Actually, David's in the room.
That would be really embarrassing.
David's in the room.
Where's David? Where are you sitting, David?
David, He's hiding.
That's the guy that wrote it over there. So, David, take a note. We need to be able to build packages. Okay, he's on it. Dave is writing that right now. We should have that shipped in about 5 minutes. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question. So within that, you can see this package is all expressed in the UI. Now, there's a projects.json file here. And if I open that up, we get... curly braces, because they're much better than angle brackets.
Right.
Now, I'll be able to go into the references node there and say add references, and it'll all look and behave as before. But some people prefer to do things a little bit differently, right? So I could come here.
Well, also, let's be honest, the tooling's not there yet.
There's no tooling here.
So part of why we're showing the...
We'll be able to.
Yeah, exactly. We're showing the JSON file because we don't have the tooling yet.
Right. I'm sure, we're showing the JSON file because if I right-click here, it's like good luck.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's not going away, though.
Yeah. I'm just pointing out that the two are a view of each other.
Yes.
Right? So let's say if I go and say comma and then go like this, this is kind of cool.
This is new. This is giving you, this is something you did not get in web config. You did not get like full IntelliSense of what you wanted to actually reference or add inside of there.
So I could go and pick something here. And then it's going off to NuGet, but it's all happening asynchronously as I'm going and doing my stuff. I could go like this and pick a specific version, or I could go like that
and grab the latest version.
So you can just get the and go and get the latest one. And then if you look down here, look what just happened. Anyone notice that? Let me do this again. Watch what's going on in references over there. Okay, I'm going to hit save.
Oop, just changed.
I'm going to undo that. Watch, I want you to take one eye and look at references, and with the other eyeball, look at that blue line right there. You like that? That was awesome. So those packages are not necessarily just our packages. They're your packages. They're your interdependencies. So a NuGet package from Microsoft or from an open source project or from your local project are all reconciled in one place. It's all right. The same thing.
Exactly.
And we'll go a little bit into that towards the end.
Yeah.
Is that cool? I can go into like my home controller, and let's go ahead and just run this app.
Well, point to call out here is notice that his home controller looks just like a home controller does today.
Yeah, if I hover over it, it's ASP.NET MVC.
This is MVC.
Controller.
This is the same stuff you've been using today, so we've not gone and like melted the world.
We kind of melted the world. Hit refresh. I did not hit Control Shift B. I just hit refresh, and it's built.
It's built.
Turns out that going Control Shift B just is like spell check. You see what I'm saying? Because we as Microsoft engineers tend to think about build as being build and package and get ready and deploy in binaries, right? But that's not necessarily what it means. It's more of like a lint process.
Show
like
me
we're
my
saying
errors.
Build, show me my errors. But if I go and look at the project directory, you know, there's basically nothing there.
Right.
I could probably clean this out and there would be even less.
So to point out something else is Scott was showing a very simplified example where he was just modifying some code in the controller. You might ask yourself the question, well, what if this MVC application took a dependency on a class library and he modified the code in the class library? It would actually work exactly like it just did a second ago. We would actually go compile the class library and rerun the code from MVC. So it's pervasive throughout the entire system. The dynamic building happens everywhere.
Can I delete all that, David? Everything but this?
One of the points Scott's making here is we were talking about Roslyn earlier and the fact that we're using the Roslyn compilers. One of the performance benefits we have here is in the past, we've always compiled and put files on disk, and then the application starts and has to load the files from disk. In this world, we're actually compiling right to memory, stopping the amount of disk I/O that we're doing today.
If you think about it, like you take source files and you read them in, and then you think about them, and then you put binaries down, but then those binaries that you just put down...
And then they're read back again.
Bring them back up
in the application.
And then look at them and think about it.
In this world, we just do it all in memory.
How does it work? Okay. Sorry, you're throwing me off. How does it work with different build configurations, like debug versus release? David? It doesn't work yet. Notice that I just switched to release. I'm teasing. Just look that I switched to release. We know those things, right? So it just made a folder called release. As far as tooling stuff, it doesn't work yet, but you'll be able to express in your application some configuration information that will tell the thing whether or not it wants to go and build for debug or build for release. This is early. It's alpha. But the intent, let's just say, I think what we're trying to do by asking these questions, and this is good, is you're trying to get a sense of how blown up is the world. Would that be a fair statement?
I think a good point here is, we were talking about this yesterday, is another question might be, well, in this world, where does MS Build come into play?
Mm-hmm.
You can still use MS Build.
Do you want to show that?
Yeah,
I don't know if we should.
Why don't we show that? So
that's kind of, is it good to show these things? I guess they're going to look at these things anyway.
They're going to find them anyway.
All right, fine. It's openness. Let's right click here and hit unload project. Understand that my reticence to show you stuff is not like a secrecy reticence as it is a I don't want to completely freak you out reticence. But since we've already done that, let's just go nuts. So right, there's still a project file in this case, but this is an important note. Who needs this project file? Visual Studio needs this project file.
Right.
Okay? Visual Studio needs this project file to keep track of different things. You might think of this right here, this is all vestigial. This is not going to be needed. That's just there for Visual Studio in this daily build to understand what's going on. You can actually ignore that. This stuff here in the targets is MS Build shelling out and calling our ASP.NET vNext compiling stuff. To prove to you that that project file isn't needed, I can go back and reload this project, go into another editor, and let's open that project up over here. So I'm over in Sublime. I just downloaded this one. That's why I haven't paid for it yet, but I will pay for it. No, with all, you know, with much, much respect to the Sublime guy, I just put this machine together like an hour ago. So here I am in Sublime. I've also added Razer support in Sublime here. Yay, it's Sublime. Oops, go to about where that text is. Is this the wrong folder? Oh, what am I hitting F5 over here for? Doo-doo-doo. Here you go. Make sense? So the project file is there for Visual Studio tooling to light up, but I can be doing this in Notepad or Sublime or whatever. The magic isn't in Visual Studio.
Once again, the scenario I was talking about before, if your application's in an Azure website, up in the cloud, and you're using the Monaco editor, you don't have Visual Studio, you don't have a project system, you don't have those things.
Exactly.
And that's the scenario this is trying to enable.
So Visual Studio, in this example, would allow me to have gestures where I could go in here and right-click and say add references. If I was using another text editor, you don't have any of those things. I don't get any autocomplete, but I can still type those things out and figure it out.
You're not going to get any IntelliSense in this file either. I mean, it's not going to be the...
Yeah, you're going to get pink.
Visual Studio rocks.
Yeah. So the point is that we want to enable everything, but of course we want it to light up on Visual Studio. Okay? Now, as far as like debug versus release, things like that, there's different configuration options that you can do. If we look at projects.json, right now there's dependencies, and there's configurations, and there's also another option for something called commands that we can go into. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure we're making good use of our time. I'm going to switch over to a slightly more complicated example where I've commented some stuff out. This is not deeply more complex. I've just added a couple of things. So in here, we've got a couple more dependencies we've added. We've added Microsoft.framework.configuration model that I'll go into in a minute. And then we've got Microsoft.data.entity for the next version of Entity Framework. And we've got a number of different things, including, in this case, an in-memory Entity Framework.
Right.
So this is where there's no database. It's just an in-memory store for quick work like this. So I can have DB sets and query them all in memory.
Or think of unit tests. You might actually want to
do unit tests
and actually build the stuff on the fly, stick it in memory, run your test, and
right.
then kill it.
And unit tests is a great example that gets us into commands. So look at commands. I just made this command up. So I can go here and there's a command called web, and we'll talk about that in a second. I made up another command I just typed called web with URL. And then I could, if I wanted to, make a command called test to get into the question about, you know, build management and things like that. I could make whatever I want there. It's just whatever word you want. So then when would that come into play? When would I want to do that? Well, there's a command line ability to go and run these things and manage it that we'll jump into. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's hop out here. And I'm going to just take this path here. Excuse me, take this path, and I'm going to go cd print. And I'm going to make this a little bit wider. Okay. So there's our stuff. And I can say KVM. This is not, this is how you do it today in the bits that you're going to get.
Easily
change. We'll pick another letter. There's 25 other letters we can pick, it turns out.
Do KVM list.
Somebody was like, what about the KVM? I'm never going to be able to buy a KVM switch again. So if I go and say KVM list, that's going to show the .NET frameworks that are on this machine. You can actually, if you have a machine now, if you type CLR ver, it's one of those command line things that you're going to be shocked that it's been on your computer all these years and you never really knew. It'll show you the versions of the .NET framework. You have this now. It's like CLR ver. And this is kind of like that. But it's a little bit more sophistication because it allows you to scope things. Right now, notice that the active column is empty. There's nothing in there. I could go and say KVM use and then type in alpha build. And then here we've got builds 418 and 420. I'll say 420. And then run KVM list again, and you'll see that that's now active, right? Notice also that it's got this dot packages location here. If I go and say user Scott KRE, we can look in there and you can see where this stuff is. And this is important, and I know this is a 101 level thing, but when someone does something that's magic in Windows, I always want to see, well, where exactly did this happen? So when I was originally teaching people how to use .NET 1 and 2, we would do these demos, and then a miracle happens. You know, and then what? And I was like, well, okay, well, let's go down into Windows, Microsoft.NET Framework, /framework, and there are the there's where the thing is, right? You guys want to see that kind of stuff, do you
that's,
not?
That's another great point as well is, you know, if we freaked you out by saying we're going to ship the framework as part of your application, our goal is not to have like 80 copies of the framework on your machine.
Right.
We're going to have some place on your machine that we cache these things, and they only have like one copy of a particular framework
right.
that all your applications can use.
So it's totally appropriate to have lots of copies of JSON.NET on a, you know, as an example, on a per project basis, but you don't want to have 12 meg files strewn all over the place.
All over the place.
So in this case, this is a cache for this stuff, and these NuGet packages, David is trying to get us to call them NupKegs. So if you want to make that a thing, just around the office, just say, yeah, we're going to build that up into a NupKeg and see if that
sticks.
See, it's not going to happen, David, and I don't know why you insist on making us call it that. So it's true, though.
It's true.
He says it all the time. He also doesn't know how to pronounce Ubuntu. This is 11 megs, so that's a NupKeg. I can actually open that up with the NuGet Package Explorer that you can download now as well, and you can see there's a bunch of miracles in there, right? That is all of the stuff. It's kind of a mixed model here. There's native code.
Can you zoom in on that?
What's that?
Can
you zoom in on that?
Yeah. On the actual text
in
there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
So look at that. See, the CLR is in there. There's managed code and there's unmanaged code. There's C++ in there and there's managed code in there. Yeah. That is effectively, you had said that the .NET framework's a couple hundred megs. That's the core optimized one in 11 megs.
That's the cloud optimized.
The cloud optimized thing, that's it right there. And you'll notice that there's a couple different versions and we'll get into that. So here we see this version, you know, 408, you know, 418, which presumably happened in April. Is that April 18th? I don't know. Yeah. Do the numbers mean anything? I don't know what 420 means. So that one's now active. So I'm going to go and then say K. Now you remember those projects. Let's go back here. You remember these commands here? This command web? This is saying, hey, go and load this here. Let's do this. Let's just try K by itself and watch it crash. Okay, so here it's saying unable to locate project JSON. Yep. So that means I'm in the wrong folder. Okay, I'm in the solution folder, so I'll go down one. Okay, so there's the project JSON right there. So now I'll say K again. This will probably crash again. Okay, starter web does not contain a static main. Because this is effectively a DLL in the sense that we're going to need a host for that to live within. Like this is an app, but it's not a console app, so it's not going to run, and it's got no main.
It tried to run a console
It tried
app.
To run. It was like, I looked around for a main. You know, there's no door here. So I can make a command and say, well, I want you to go and load this, which probably has a main, and then get this optimized version of the HTTP listener, and then go back, kind of call out, and then back over into my application. And I can call this web, or I can call it foo. It doesn't matter. It's not magic. Okay? So now, theoretically, I could go and then say kfoo. And then it's totally going to crash. So no address prefixes were defined. That's because I told it to do that, but I didn't tell it where to listen. So then here, web with URL includes a parameter list, name equals value, that says, well, you're going to need this information later. So here I'm going to say, go listen on port 8080. So now I'm going to say, K web with URL. So it says started. Now I think I said 8080. See? Totally worked. We just ran Bing at the command line. It's amazing. Boom. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So now that's really happening. I'm going to go in here and hit Control C. It's gone. Isn't that cool? Yeah, it is cool. Anything you want to add?
Wouldn't that be a good time to show that you can actually build this application? You could copy it to a memory stick, run it on my laptop?
Before we do that, let's run it multiple times on multiple versions of the CLR.
Okay.
Is that cool? So here, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this web that does not have these URLs at the end. All right? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say kwebserver.urls equals localhost, and this was version 420, right? So 420. And actually, I'm going to go over here into startup. I'm going to make a change. This is our startup here. This is the autoexec.bat of ASP.NET vNext, if I may mix my metaphors. And I'm going to take this here and I'm going to uncomment this. So this is kind of like a route, but I'm basically, it's much lower level than that. I'm saying this app is going to do this thing. So I'm basically putting it ahead of everything else. So MVC is never going to get a chance. I'm putting it above MVC. All this app knows how to do is go and spit out the assembly version.
It runs
of this
those three lines of code.
Yeah, this will never. This other stuff will never happen.
This is a bare metal app that only knows how to run.
So I've just switched it from an MVC app to a do nothing.
I'm going
to
run a function.
Hello world app, right? And that should be running on 5.4.20. Yes, sir. Restart the app, he says. I'm going to start bringing the developer on all talks because it's way better. It avoids embarrassment. See? Totally worked. I badly need help. All right. So now, let's open up another command prompt. And then this time, is it two? Starter web two. We'll go over here.
What Scott's going to show is he's basically going to go run the same app again in a command prompt with a different version of the CLR.
So KVM list, KVM use, 0.1-alpha-build-0418. Check it. Cool. kwebserver.urls equals localhost. I'll put on a different port now. 5.4.1.8. So I'm running the exact same app. Totally crashes. Could not load web. Am I in the right folder here? Oh, I'm doing two. This should be one. Thanks for catching that and helping me, guys.
As he looks at Fowler.
No, I'm just teasing. My errors are my own. And then I'm going to go on that port. Boom. So now I've got the exact same application running under totally different versions of the next version of ASP.NET.
Of the framework. We're running two frameworks side by side, same application, just being launched from different command prompts. You're running different versions of the CLR. Just showing you.
I wonder if that's really true, though. Could be a lie. We can't trust those guys. Yeah, so that is the same application.
Yeah. Do you want to show configuration or dependency injection?
Yeah, let's do that. We'll get to your thing in just a second.
Yeah, let's do those first. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to put this away. And let's do config first. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So when I was learning about this the first time, I was like, well, what about configuration? Now, this is all extremely, extremely early. Right now, when you think of configuration, you think of like app settings and things like that, and we'll support those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But they've made configuration configurable. So you can go in here and say configuration model.json or configuration model.this or that and have different configs. So if you decide that you want your config to be a JSON file instead of an XML file, you can do that. So I decided that clearly an .ini file would be the only way to do config in the next version of ASP.NET. So I'm going to go back to the future, and we're going to go straight 1987.
Well, a cool aspect of this is when you're running locally, you might actually want to have your configuration, let's say it's in a JSON file or an .ini file. But when you're in the cloud, you might want to actually have it come from the environment variables. If you're at an Azure website, you actually set your configuration up in the portal, and it sets environment variables.
Sure.
The cool thing is you can actually build your app to layer these things and give them a priority. So you can say, hey, I want to try the JSON file, but if there's environment, it overrides the JSON file,
right,
which means I can run it locally with a JSON file, copy to the cloud, and the environment variables in the cloud will override my settings in the JSON
file. Right, so you'd have basically kind of nested, cascading, not style sheets, but cascading trees of configuration.
Right.
But the point here is that you have absolute, complete control. So when I was talking to them, I was like, this is going to be complicated, right? Like, I'm going to have to go and write a provider and stuff. It's actually really, really simple, but .ini files, it turns out that they have a very interesting way to do pathing. If I go like this, I'm saying configuration, and then there's an extension method here to say add .ini file. So I'm making a new configuration, I go and say add .ini file, and then this path here is saying kind of like section and then item within it. But if it was JSON, it would do the same thing. So this is kind of like XPath for config. I thought it was kind of a clever way to do things. But the point is that in minimal amount of effort, I'm able to do some pretty cool stuff. So that came out of there.
Right.
So total control. Now, this is going to freak people out because some people don't want control. This is true, right? We're going to support those people, too, because they're going to go file new ASP.NET project, and they're going to pick some stuff, and they're just going to go about their lives. And that's going to be totally awesome for those guys. But for everyone who comes to TechEd, they're going to be able to do whatever they want to do.
Well, the cool scenario is as I said, you publish to the cloud. We inject the environment variable configuration in for you automatically when you're in the cloud, and it overrides the .ini file.
I know that's your scenario.
That's my scenario.
My scenario is .ini files.
And as Scott mentioned, we will provide a way to read like the app settings sections out of web config files as well. So we're not going to make you have to throw those files away.
Exactly. So another thing that you might want to work just out of the box would be, you know, some basic dependency injection.
Who all knows what dependency injection is?
Okay, wow. Let's about half.
That's a good number.
Good. But some people might not, and they might want to know why it matters. So let's say that I've got a home controller, and the home controller is going to talk to the database. You know, what I would typically do is I might say something like, here's my person context person, and I might just make one. Right? And that's how you kind of do stuff. So now I'm basically attaching my controller to my person context, and they're going to be friends forever, and there's nothing I can do about it. But then some engineer might say, well, you know, you really need to make an iPerson context. So then I make an iPerson context, and I'm like, well, I don't really see how I gained anything there, right? But then they'll say, well, this is a dependency. This thing needs this person context, but it shouldn't know anything about it. So you might want to say something like, I'll have one of these. This would be I'm doing basic poor man's dependency injection, but I would have this would be interfaces. We have a person context, but I don't know where it's coming from. Because there might be different flavors. There might be an in-memory one for testing, and there might be a MongoDB one, and there might be an Indie framework one. You don't know. I'm going to have some interface, but I need it. And then this would go away. So there's no default constructor anymore.
Right.
So home controller doesn't know where to get that. Now, let's see if this will crash and how badly it will crash. So it crashes really badly.
There's no longer a yellow screen of death. We now
have
a blue unhappy
face.
Yeah.
Don't you like that better? Isn't that way better than the yellow string of death? Should we, totally serious question, should we keep that or is that too cheesy? You should totally keep that, okay. We're gonna ship that thing. That's freaking awesome. What about if it went, was that too much? Yeah, probably too much.
Look at the air there.
Yeah, yeah. So let's look at the air here. To do, David. unable to resolve service. So it's like, hey, I don't know, you want one of these things, and I don't really have one of these things. I'm not sure where I'm going to get that. Well, in startup, remember how we said you have to opt in for stuff. You have to say, if you want something, where are you going to get it? So I'm going to do two things here. First, person context happens to be an entity framework in memory store. That's kind of unrelated. I'll add that. And here I can say services.addScoped. You can add different kinds of services. You might have a singleton service, or in this case, it's scoped to a request. So I'm saying I want a scoped service. Now again, I should have done this with interfaces and done it more appropriately, but I would basically say this is a factory, you know, and if you want an iPerson context, then I'll give you a person context. But then when I do it during testing, it would be from a whatever. And this is all kind of built in, and it's our own basic dependence injection. But if you wanted your own and you wanted to use one of the popular ones like AutoFac or StructureMap, then you would plug that in here into this system and it would work using the existing dependency injection understanding that you have. So let's see if that works. I love that, by the way. I think that's the best ever. And then to prove that, let's go here and hit a breakpoint. Hit F5. See? And then we've got one.
Yeah.
So the controller at the time it got constructed was like, okay, I don't have a default constructor. I do have this one. Who's going to give that to me? And then it goes and it asks the system that it hands it in. It's all built in out of the box.
Right.
Isn't that nice?
I think it's pretty cool. I think it gives you dependency injection without having to even really know what it is. It's like,
exactly.
Here's this magic thing that, but it's not magic.
Yeah. And then as you can imagine, then I would go and put in test as a command here, and they would act differently while it's under test. And I go and say K-test, and it works. And I go say K-web, and I run it, and I do my coded UI tests or whatever, and then deploy.
Exactly. One could use in memory. One could use SQL.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me see what else. So, do you want me to? Yeah, let's do this. Let's put it on a stick. You think it'll work? All right, give me a USB key.
Where's the USB key? There it is. This is staged. Why don't you make sure you delete whatever's on that USB key so they know that it's real?
My BitLocker recovery keys? No, I'm not going to delete those. You're trying to get me canned. All right, I'm going to right-click here, and I'm going to say publish. And I'm going to just say, this is not staged.
One of the things we're showing here is Scott's going to basically publish the web application to the memory stick. We're going to transfer the memory stick to my computer and run it and show that because it's all self-contained, you can basically just lift an app up, move it, and it will work everywhere.
Now you'll notice here, even though I didn't have the runtime in my app here, because it's global, right, and we don't want to pay the price, it knows that I'm publishing it, so it's taking that runtime with us because it knows we're going somewhere. Okay? So while it's doing that, I'm going to run over onto the, that's not a problem at all. I'm going to go over here, and remember each of those commands that we had there? Test or web or whatever, each one of those became a batch file. Now, there is a bug that I'm going to fix here, and this is a bug that I discovered yesterday, where that right there is the wrong path.
Yep.
It should be www root. That's just a generation error. www root. You can see there's our host right there, but notice that this right here, this DP0, that's the current folder. So it's saying slash packages. So it's running the host of this thing underneath this package right there. It's actually coming in here and using that version of the framework that's now on this USB key. So now I'm going to pull that out. And life is too short to safely eject USB keys.
Brave.
You know it. I give it a little shake to flush the right cache.
You're going to crash my computer.
So now he's going to switch over onto, hang on, slow down. What machine are you on? What number is this?
Four.
So he's going to switch over to number four. Apparently Solange is having some trouble with Jay-Z. I want to make sure that everyone following the news on that, the elevator video was really concerning. So go ahead and go into, this is not staged. And then, yeah, go ahead and run that one. This is off of my key, so we'll see how fast this is. And hopefully I typed correctly in the batch file. Okay, and then my little USB key's flashing here, because it's got to load 11 megs of runtime.
Off a slow storage.
Off of a, well, that's a lousy stick, I'm afraid. Flash, 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 flash. Go, 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 go. Started, so then hit 8080.
We just ran that off a flash stick. Copy a web application, put it on a flash stick. The CLR, the whole thing, part of the application runs off of my machine.
So let's do this and then the source.
Okay.
Is that cool? So another place that it runs is over here. So here I'm just going to go and say run Sublime. So here's my Razor. Here's my JSON file. This one's a little bit different, though. I keep forgetting how to zoom on a Mac. Hang on. It used to be Control. Let's do that one. Well, that's not helpful. I want to go over here.
Yeah, I think we didn't point out enough. How many people in the room have actually tried to copy an ASP.NET app from one machine to another and had trouble making it work? Please tell me there's hands in the room. That's hard to do sometimes, that memory stick thing.
You're saying, really. You're trying to get more applause?
What are I love that memory stick. The memory stick is
awesome.
You
like that demo? We just made that up like 10 minutes before the
talk. We did. We actually did it before the talk.
What if we put it on a memory stick?
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't see why that's cool at all. And he's like, I think they'll applaud. Okay.
That's why he's the boss. You notice here that the hosting server is a little bit different, right? So we've got a different version of that, and we'll go back and look at the packages. But look at our dependencies. Still ASP.NET MVC. I've still got controllers and views and whatnot. So here, I'll go and say kweb. Started. I'll go and run Safari, the browser of choice for three people. And there's our ASP.NET application running on this Mac. Yay! So if we go back over here, I'm going to go into Program Files, Microsoft Web Tools, Packages. And I can see all of this stuff. And there's our runtime packages. We saw version 4.18 and 4.20. And then here is our mono one. See? So it's a different, you know, it's a different package because it had different needs. Remember what we looked inside of the Windows one? It had lots of unmanaged code in C++ and Magic. And the mono one's going to be slightly different.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to go and play with these things. But we're adding mono to the test matrix. So when our continuous integration tests run, they're going to treat mono as just another thing in the matrix. Okay? Did you get a text message?
I've not got verification, but it looks like it's up with a...
Do you want to wait for a text message? We just have only maybe 1,000 people waiting, so we can just... You going to text the dude?
Yeah.
He's texting the dude. What? Oh, David says it's okay.
Okay.
So that means it's okay. So do me a favor and make this bigger, because bigger fonts are more impressive. And then let's switch over to your machine, and then get ready to applaud. What is that, a little sad? This is now live on GitHub. You guys can go and clone this stuff and play with it. So this is now live.
Everything we showed today is live. You can download the source code. It's there.
Dun, 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 dun. That graphic's a little bit pixelated.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. All right.
You can also jump back over to my machine.
Oh, okay.
You can also...
Oh, you updated that site too?
We just did update this as well.
Yeah. So this is the place to go for basically all things ASP.NET. Go to the ASP... You need help with that?
No.
Gotcha. There you go. ASP.NET/VNext. All of this stuff up at that website. And then, of course, you get the link to GitHub there. Getting started from the docs folks, walking you through this stuff step by step. This is actually a really great article that'll talk about all the different benefits, and it'll walk you through how to get started, what things look like. You should have this running in just a couple of minutes
on
your machines. It's really, really easy. Now, it's interesting, though, that this is up on GitHub. So if we scroll down a little bit, we've got SignalR, we've got lots of cool stuff. We've got MVC right there as well. Could you go into that for me? So within MVC, your network went down.
I noticed that. So on your machine.
I'll switch to my machine.
And I'm on the demo network, so should not have gone down.
No worries. So here's MVC, all right?
Oh, it shows this demo.
Yeah, it's gonna. It's nice. Yes. So this is MVC. This is Razor. This is the whole thing right here. Now this is like I was impressed when they showed me all this kind of stuff, and I was like, yeah, you guys are really technical geniuses, and because you have to do that. It makes them feel better about themselves. But they were like, but you don't understand. Like, you don't see the big picture. So I was like, well, impress me, because that's what you got to say. He said, impress me. And they said, well, here we talked about how there's packages and references and packages and NuGets are all kind of the same thing. But what if there's a bug? This is very, very unlikely to happen. But let's say there's a bug in MVC.
No.
How would I fix that bug here, right? Usually what you do is you file the bug and you wait for the NuGet package to be published again, and then it's a whole hassle. Right now, today, with current ASP.NET, you can do this. You can take private builds. We have a nightly server. We've got a special NuGet feed for you. You can do this today, but not like this. What if I went to GitHub for Windows and cloned MVC? Here's MVC. I'll show you that it's real. Here's all the source. All I did was clone it. All right? Now notice the path that it's in. It's in C, GitHub, MVC, source. Now I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to make a file at the solution level. This is important. It's at the solution level called global.json. And in that, I'm going to put an array called sources. Okay? And that's pointing to that location. And then I'm going to come back over here, and I'm actually getting confused. I'm going to declare tab bankruptcy. Notice what just popped over here. The project knows that I have references to MVC. It knows that, and it's been getting them from NuGet packages, right? But I just told it that there's some source over here. And it said, well, hang on a second, that looks like MVC. So it brought those into my project. Okay, hang on, don't clap yet. Don't clap until you see the poo. I've got little kids, so there's a lot of poo. The boys are into poo right now. If you have a six-year-old, you know what I'm talking about. So what if I modified ASP.NET MVC itself to force the insertion of a blink tag with the word poo after every view result? So I've just brought down the entire framework.
Just the MVC framework.
But apparently the blink tag has been deprecated.
It's deprecated, it didn't work anymore.
Yeah. That's unacceptable. there is a polyfill for ASP for HTML5. So I'm going to go into the views, and I'm going to add that polyfill.
So, you know, Scott showed this kind of a manual process. We envision being able to actually, from the tooling, let's say you're playing with MVC and you're like, why does this not work the way I expect it to work? Imagine being able to go to the references node, right-click on MVC, say get sources, we bring the sources down, put them in your project, you now can trace into MVC, and when you're done, I don't want this anymore, you right-click on MVC and you say remove sources, and make it that simple. So you can grab any piece of the framework, pull it down, play with it, modify it.
And what if you could even potentially fix it and send a pull request all from within here?
Yeah.
And then if I want to get rid of this stuff, and by the way, I just hit a breakpoint inside of ASP.NET MVC itself where I'm now stepping through and I can see everything.
Everything.
And then to undo that process, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to just start deleting these things. I'm going to go to global JSON. I'm going to comment this out. And then I'm going to run this again after having killed IIS. And we'll put it back the way that it was. Cool?
Yeah.
It's nice.
Have we showed what framework you're targeting?
Ah, good point.
We have not showed that the whole time.
Yes, valid point. So you can switch back and forth. And this is really important. Why don't you talk about this?
So one of the things that, you know, we talked about this cloud-optimized framework.
This just has a letter. It'll say cloud-optimized.
It'll say cloud-optimized or something. This is just alpha. But the point is, you can use all these features of MVC, Web API, SignalR, EF, all this stuff against the exact same framework that you're using today.
That's really important, and I want to make sure that you understand that the crazy stuff that we're doing in the projects, JSON, the type some code and hit refresh, this is all available to...
Works everywhere.
Everywhere. The only difference, and this took me a while to get my head around, the only difference is that this cloud-optimized framework has a little bit less...
It has less stuff.
Stuff.
So if you choose
like, let's say I'm generating a graphic with system.drawing.
There is no system.drawing in this world. You have to go use an alternative for
right. Resizing
an image or putting a watermark on something because it's not there today.
So this is a really interesting point, right? Let's say you've got a really great app, and you go through your entire app, and then you find that everything works great under the cloud-optimized framework. You get all the benefits of side-by-side, except that page that generates a bar chart. Well, you've got a couple choices. You can get an entirely managed version of a system.drawing kind of a thing that works in the cloud. But in the cloud, typically, you don't have the ability to call GDI and internal things like that.
Right.
Or you decide that page I'm going to upgrade to SVG or D3 or some JavaScript visualization, and that's how those are the kinds of decisions you're going to have to make.
Or you decide to use the full framework.
Or you just want it to just work, you go to full framework.
Exactly.
But so you've got a point. But I want you to understand that when
choice.
You switch down to cloud optimized, it's a constrained environment.
Yes, it's less. It's only 11 megs, as you were showing before. It's not 200 megs.
Yeah, we didn't 7-zip all of .NET into 11 megs as much as we tried.
We tried.
Yeah. Cool. Gosh, that's... So, MS Build, publishing, NuGet, KVM, NuGet packages. That's a good 101 example, wouldn't you say?
I think so.
Make sure to go up to the .NET Web Development blog. It's up at blogs, MSDN, Web Dev. And if you haven't subscribed to this blog, if you're finding it hard to keep track of what's going on in the world of ASP.NET, we've really got our act together, and I want to give you some options. Twitter/ASP.NET, Facebook.com/ASP.NET, the web dev blog, we've got the entire team, devs, PMs, and tests all blogging here. It's about 2 posts a week. Really, really great blog. The quality has gone up in the last 2 years. It's frankly one of the best resources on the net right now for ASP.NET.
So
this is not press releases. This is not marketing. These are the people who work on the product blogging about their product.
Right. We just released...
Yeah, look through the Redis example.
Exactly. A couple things here. We just announced yesterday update 2 of Visual Studio 2013. There's a great blog post on here that describes all the stuff that we did for ASP.NET inside of that.
Well, in the Redis example as well, session state for Redis.
Yeah, we've got the Rosin compiler. If you want to use the Rosin compiler with ASP.NET today, we've got a blog post on how to enable that, so you can use that immediately. We just announced a Redis cache for Azure yesterday, and we've got a session state provider for ASP.NET to run against that. We just posted an update of all the web forms improvements that happened in the update 2 time frame.
And also the ASP.NET website, I want to make sure people are looking for that. ASP.NET has tutorials, free plural site courses on ASP.NET. So if there's people at work, you're trying to get up to speed, go up to ASP.NET, click on Learn, and we've got for each different version of ASP.NET, we've got plural site courses, huge amounts of tutorials that you can check out. We've got a full-time team of writers that are putting stuff together up here, and then there's your plural site courses on the right-hand side. Those are all free, and they don't require a sign-up. Okay?
And there'll be a post on the blog as well in the next 5 or 10 minutes on the vNext stuff as well. So.
Yep. And we just want to make it clear to everybody that we want you to know that we are fighting to make the best development experience on what we think is the best platform, the best framework, and the best tools. But if you want, you can bring your own. Okay? You can use the editors you want, use the platform you want, use the hosting you want, and the tools you want. This is the direction that we're going. Feel free to give us feedback on Twitter, email, GitHub issues. Get involved. Get involved. Help us with docs. Help us with code errors. You know, be involved in our community because we're having a lot of fun, and we want you guys to have fun as well.
And if you like what you saw, David's going to come up in a few minutes, and they're going to go really deep and explain how the compilation works and how the dependency injection works and all the deep bits.
Yep. We're going to take a break, and then it'll be me and David Fowler having some fun. So thank you very, very much.